This show is sponsored by MidasResources.com, your trusted source for precious metals since 1996. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Back with Gene and Chris. You know, we had a lot of fun discussions in the Paracast community forums last week with regard to our interview with Ryan Skinner about the Skinwalker Ranch. People are eternally interested in that place. Just can't get away from it. Can't run out of material. So I had a lot of fun with it, Chris.
Yeah, you know, having had a chance to go further through Ryan's new book, I really do think that he's done a good job. It's light years ahead of his first book, which was basically more of a journal, sort of a personal, you know, story about his involvement with the ranch. This book goes into quite a bit of history and some pretty intriguing stories from around the region, plus, of course, the documentation that he reveals very courageously, I might add. And I think the show went good, and the response has been really good.
And Ryan is really loyal to the forums. So if you ask him a question in the forums, within a day or so, he'll respond.
Yeah, that's true.
If it's critical, doesn't matter. He'll talk about it. He'll let all of it hang out, and he'll tell you what he thinks. So there you go. That's last week's episode. If you didn't hear it, download a copy. In fact, I got an email from somebody. I can't download the show. What's going on? All I can get is live streaming. So we have download links all over our site, theparacast.com, and you can download it directly from iTunes. So he says, I don't want to use iTunes. All right, fine. Here's a link. Use this one. Well, it just brings up the player. Yes, it does. And if you right-click, you can download the show. I don't want to bother with all that. I'm not going to listen to your show anymore. So easy come, easy go. One listener lost. Another thing that happened in just recent days is we had an anniversary in the UFO field, and I don't think too many people bothered to write about it, although some discussion has arisen since then. On June 24th, 1947, 67 years ago, Kenneth Arnold had his famous sighting over Mount Rainier in the state of Washington, 9 crescent-shaped objects. You know, their motion was described as like saucers skipping across water, and therefore we got the flying saucer mystery. But it doesn't seem as if a lot of people care anymore. I didn't see any great anniversaries, and you kind of think this is how it really started in the modern era. We ought to pay more attention to it.
You know, I can see that for a whole generation and a half, probably, of newcomers to the field. You know, the Kenneth Arnold sighting kind of faintly rings a bell, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's such ancient history to most folks under 40, let's say, that it's going to be to no surprise to me that it barely passed by with a whisper.
But think about it for a moment. If Kenneth Arnold hadn't looked in the wrong direction or right direction, hadn't seen that formation of whatever it was, there had been no UFO flurry then, where would all of us be now?
Well, that just happens to be the most celebrated sighting from that time period. Of course, the following 2 weeks before Roswell, you know, you had a major flap of activity in Idaho, Oregon, Northern California. I think in Washington, and there were other reports. And I think even down in Arizona, their report. So this would have broken through as a news story, regardless of whether or not he had actually had that particular sighting. I'm pretty convinced of that. We may have a different term, flying plates or flying, I don't know. Well, it was before the Frisbee Pie Company, so how about flying pie plates?
Well, think of it this way, though. Would we call them UFOs eventually? What about the alternate phrases UAP, which is what NARCAP and some other people use, or UAO, which is what APRO used? But you wonder also if the publicity surrounding the Arnold case made people look up into the skies and maybe a lot of the other sightings and I'm going to assume that a fair number of them were genuine, would not have been reported. It gave a focal point.
No, it's true. Yeah, you're right.
And that's what it needs.
Unless we get into some alternative universe.
We can talk about that. No Donald Kehoe writing about UFOs. He continued to write fiction. You know, he wrote superhero-type fiction in addition to his stuff about aviation. He was a science fiction writer. Not a terribly good one. I've read some of his stuff. It is available online. It's public domain. But he created some characters that, to me, were reminiscent of some of the modern superheroes, like a Captain America alternative, that kind of thing. So that's what Kehoe would have done. What would Jim Moseley have done? Now, of course, we all remember Jim Moseley and Saucer Smear. He died a couple of years ago, a very close friend of mine. And during the early 1950s, he went on a trip around the United States, basically to put material together to write a book. The book never appeared. Well, I guess it kind of appeared later in the book Shockingly Close to the Truth, where he used part of it. But what would this aimless, spoiled, rich kid, this trust fund baby, what would he have done if he wasn't chasing after UFOs?
You got me there, Gene. I have no idea. Perhaps he would have gone into the cigar importing business, or perhaps he would become a shoe designer. How about a guy that screws the lids on coffee cans of the day, or maybe toothpaste tubes, like in Willy Wonka? I don't know, Gene. What are you asking me for?
He did, of course, go to South America to do what he called grave robbing, which is, of course, to go to these relics of past civilizations and grab what he could and sell it.
Maybe he would have opened up a home for wayward youth.
So far, every possibility you've mentioned is as far from the real Jim Moseley as you can imagine. I'm kind of glad things turned out the way they did, even though my life was turned upside down. I'm sure Chris's was as well, as was the life probably of our next guest. After a few months' absence, the ever-prolific paranormal writer, Nick Redfern, is with us. And, you know, when I think of the title of his book, Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind, I think of when I first read about the deaths or the early deaths of some people in or related to the UFO field. Like, for example, M.K. Jessup, back in the 1950s, he wrote a book called The Case for the UFO, The Expanding Case for the UFO, and a few others. I didn't hear much from him. I was really young when it happened. But one day, in Dade County in Florida, in a park, he runs the carbon monoxide into his car, and he goes to sleep and he doesn't wake up again. Now, in point of fact, I'm going to ask Nick why he thinks there may have been something strange about it. Understand that his life wasn't so great the past year of his life. He was in a serious auto accident the year before. He and his wife were breaking up. He had tried to continue his writing career, and the publishers just weren't interested in his book ideas. So things weren't going so well. You wonder, though, how bad someone's life could be before they decide to off themselves. And in this case, you know, it requires kind of an effort, you know, to close up your car, to funnel the exhaust into there, and to just stay there and just let it end. Of course, possibly he had psychological problems that we don't understand. But is it related to UFOs? That's the point of this book, by the way, and this is what we're going to ask Nick. And I'll say honestly, I'm still kind of skeptical of some of this stuff. I mean, we understand some people in the UFO field had early or earlier deaths. A lot of other people lived their full natural lives. Jim Moseley died at 81 years of age, a full life. Stanton Friedman is here. He's going to be 80. And by the way, he is recovering from a heart attack, and we wish him well. But I'm hoping he's going to be around for a while. He's an alert, spry man, still, you know, smart as a whip, and we hope that he'll be recovering. But certainly, he's already lived a long and useful life. So whatever happens, we couldn't judge that as being strange. But we'll see. The book is Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. The guest is Nick Redfern, who does one of the best Paracast stingers we've heard, other than Chris O'Brien. And we'll compare them, because with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TechNightOwl for a special discount.
On average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw for enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
If you need to say happy birthday, happy anniversary, thank you, or simply, I'm thinking of you, ProFlowers.com is the key. ProFlowers has stunning bouquets, like the best-selling 100 blooms for $19.99. Plus, ProFlowers will include a glass vase for free. Sending someone a wonderful surprise of beautiful flowers sent fresh from the field is easy. Choose the bouquet you like, pick the delivery date, and each order is 100% guaranteed. Plus, all bouquets from ProFlowers are guaranteed to last at least 7 full days. Beautiful, fragrant flowers, picked fresh and sent to your loved one for lasting enjoyment. To get this incredible savings and send someone 100 gorgeous blooms with a free vase for $19.99, go to ProFlowers.com. Click the blue microphone in the top right corner and enter code PLOW. That's ProFlowers.com. Click the mic and enter code PLOW.
Question. Could too many GMO foods and toxins be overloading your digestive and immune systems? Answer, yes. If you're searching for a powerful detox that's gentle enough to use every day, use Pro-EM1 from Terraganix. Pro-EM1 is a powerful liquid probiotic that uses good bacteria to suppress pathogens and gently eliminate toxins from your body. A healthy digestive system will cleanse and remove toxins, support weight loss, improve absorption of food nutrients, and aid in controlling yeast and other infections. Pro-EM1 is made with only non-GMO and certified organic ingredients, has no preservatives, and is dairy, soy, wheat, and gluten-free. Pro-EM1 is the key to your digestive health. Order Pro-EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganix.com, spelled TERRAGANIX.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Also available through Amazon Prime. Pro-EM1 from Terraganix. Life's getting better.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Before we started, I was asking Nick Redfern once again why he hasn't surprised me and gotten Skype to work on his personal computer. And he tells me that, what, I'm the only one who asks him?
Yeah, every other show I do, they demand a landline. Not only do they demand a landline, they all insist on a corded landline as well. And so that's pretty much... I mean, like, for example, you know, the shows like Coast to Coast, they will not allow you to, you know, do the show via Skype. You have to use a landline.
Do they understand you can actually call people on the phone with Skype and receive phone calls?
Well, yeah, of course. Well, the way it's been told to me by a lot of the shows I do is that although they prefer Skype in terms of quality, so many of the shows tell me they get dropped a lot when they're using Skype.
Well, I understand with a live show. That makes sense.
Yeah.
We have run into problems, scattered problems, but not a lot. And even with a regular landline, you get a disconnect every so often.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, no system's faultless, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, for Skype, you know, I just don't use it.
Someday you'll surprise us.
Oh, I doubt it. I mean, I've got Skype, but the laptop I've got, I've had a glitch on it where Skype just won't open. And, you know, for the sake of having to get a new laptop just for Skype is pointless, you know, when I never use it.
You've never just called HP and said, fix it. I mean,
oh,
HP's
yeah, actually,
a pretty good company.
I had the Geek Squad looking at it. I was on the phone for like 2 or 3 hours once, literally, with Skype's people, and none of them could figure it out. It just won't open. You know, the icon just won't open.
The men in black have taken over Skype. That's it. They've read your books, and you wrote the wrong thing. There's some paragraph or sentence somewhere in one of your books that offends the people with Skype, so they call their black helicopters out, or they call their security station and said, don't let them use Skype.
Or it's due to the fact that I've got a six-year-old laptop.
I don't know. I have a computer that's almost 5 years old. Runs fine. But then it's a Mac.
I've always found, you know, that I get to sort of that age and things start to go a little bit cranky now and again.
That's it. Computers do that. People get cranky, too. I get very cranky at my age. Chris knows. Chris, he doesn't reveal that on the air. Okay. How do you pick subjects sometimes for these books? Like, for example, Closing Characters of the Fatal Kind, where you're looking into the possible connection of the deaths of certain people to maybe something involved in the UFO mystery. What inspired you to do this?
Often it's different things. I mean, this one was one that I personally wanted to write. Probably half the books I've done for New Page, which is 10 books, they've come up with the idea. You know, it's actually not me who comes up with it. I mean, the books, for example, World's Weirdest Places, For Nobody's Eyes Only, NASA Conspiracies, and a couple more, that was just New Page saying to me, we'd like somebody to write those books. Would you like to be the person who writes them? You know, so there was no, you know, it hadn't crossed my mind to even write those books. That was just purely, you know, like a work agreement, a contract. But some of the books I write, you know, or the most of the books I write, I should say, are where I come up with the idea. And you always, you know, if you're going to write a book, you want to be able to give the reader something new. And so that was the point of this book. I was sort of looking around for new ideas and realized that nobody had ever written a full-length book on all the various strange and mysterious or suspicious deaths in ufology, even though, you know, there have been articles on them or somebody might have done a chapter on this person or that person, but there hadn't been like an overall study. So I thought, well, why not make that sort of the next one and sort of the last one, because this is my last like UFO conspiracy book. I'm not doing any more after this one. And so I thought it was kind of like a nice way to go out, so to speak.
All right. Okay, so this is your UFO conspiracy swan song. Okay.
Yeah.
So the point being here is that we look at the deaths of different people and we see if there is possibly a UFO connection. So we have this U.S. Secretary of Defense back in the 40s, James Forrestal. And he jumps out the window in a hotel, right?
Well, no, hospital.
Hospital, that's right. Okay, he's at a hospital. He's being treated for psychological problems there, though.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so he's at the hospital, and one day he does what?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Either he jumped from the 16th floor, a 16th floor window, or fell, or was pushed, and... You know, those are really the only scenarios. The official line is that because he was taken to the hospital in a depressed state, that it sort of overwhelmed him while he was still in there. And when he was left alone, conveniently, at one point in the early hours of May the 22nd, 49, he leapt to his death. Other people feel that that it wasn't suicide, that it was murder. And they point to the fact that his brother phoned the hospital one day before his death on the 21st, said, "I'm taking him home tomorrow." And, of course, he never had a chance to because he died later that night. People in the UFO field have suggested, and granted it's all rumour, but they've suggested that he'd been briefed on the UFO subject when he became Secretary of Defence, the first Secretary of Defence, and that this kind of all overwhelmed him. And he was someone who had psychological issues even before he got the job. And his wife was a full-blown alcoholic. And so they had like a tense relationship, and he didn't handle stress well. So with hindsight, regardless of the reasons for his death, you know, he may not have been the right person for the job. So, you know, it's like a lot of these deaths, it's sort of 65 years on, it's unlikely we'll ever really know the full story.
So I assume then that the common perception is the guy had problems. Mm-hmm. He offed himself, jumps out of the window, end of story. Of course, you wonder, why do you take somebody with a known history of psychological problems, based on what you say in your book? He's got a known history. Why do you make him Secretary of Defense?
Well, I don't know if it was actually known publicly or even to the President, Truman, at the time, who appointed him to the job. I mean, this has all sort of come out since with biographies written on him and, you know, interviews back in the 50s and 60s with colleagues who were still alive and family and friends. So I'm not sure to what extent that was known outside of the family back in the 40s. But I mean, he was, in terms of his character and his ability to sort of, you know, deal on a worldwide basis, you know, with high-ranking figures, that wasn't an issue. It was just when things began to overwhelm him. Like most of us, you know, you have something that happens on a bad day, but you deal with it, you cope with it because you have to. But that was his problem. Now, as I said, the stories within ufology are that he got a briefing on the UFO subject when he became Secretary of Defense in 47. But, of course, you know, this was barely just 2 months after Roswell and Kenneth Arnold. So if aliens did crash at Roswell, there probably wasn't much to brief him on beyond the fact that somebody's skulking around and we've got a few bodies and a craft and so on, which, you know, would be amazing enough. I don't know if it would cause the average person to have a breakdown if they were exposed to that data, though, you know.
Yeah, we understand. Nick Redfern's joining us. The book is Close Encounters of a Fatal Kind. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Independently leading the way for the nation. Compelling talk for every political persuasion. We are GCN.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and foreign phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE. 855-340-7283.
Results will vary from case to case. Moms of America, stand up and stop taking abuse from your kids.
I pledge never to let my kid disrespect me ever again.
I pledge to stop letting my daughter walk all over me.
I pledge to stop living in fear of my son's anger.
I pledge never to feel like a bad parent ever again. Because I'm not.
I pledge to stop letting my child's behavior control my home.
I pledge to be a mom with kids who listen. A total transformation mom.
I'm Janet Lehman, co-creator of the Total Transformation Program. We created the Total Transformation to help parents with difficult child behavior. Now, I'm giving it away free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free.
Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795. Call now. Call 1-800-256-7795. That's 1-800-256-7795.
Springtime is saved big time at Herbal Healer Academy. Long-term customers know spring is the time to stock up at herbalhealer.com. And for new customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Log on for spring specials, including our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Choose from Herbal Healer's great variety of weight loss products like apple cider vinegar, Hoodia and Metabolic Complex, and Pro Metabolic, all on sale now. Also, the anti-parasite Intestinal Freedom and Warwood Plus Complex, plus Stevia Liquid Sweetener and the Super Enzymes, all on sale for spring at herbalhealer.com. As always, we offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on now to herbalhealer.com and click on Spring Specials to save big with our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy.
Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, we have Nick Redfern. He's author of what he says is going to be his last UFO conspiracy book, Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. Suspicious deaths, mysterious murders, and bizarre disappearances in UFO history. So, Forrestal, from what you're telling me, if there's anything there that's unusual, it's tenuous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. We don't have hard proof that, you know, his death was linked to the UFO subject. What we have are fairly intriguing strands suggesting that he wasn't suicide. But then, of course, you know, you've got to make a connection that takes it one step further and say it was due to UFOs rather than the strain of having to deal with the threat from the Soviets or whatever. There are a few admittedly weird aspects to the story. For example, one of the things I point out in the book, a little known thing, is just before he got admitted to hospital, Forrestal had what we might term like a classic early Man in Black experience. Now, I'm sure you both know that back in the 50s, you know, the Men in Black always traveled in groups of threes. They looked kind of odd. And they try and find a way of getting to people's homes. You know, they'd flash an ID card that turned out to be bogus or whatever. Well, just before Forrestal was admitted to hospital, he was at home with a friend when there was a knock at the door. And one of his staff answered the door, and there was like a conversation that Forrestal could just only hear, like little murmurings of. And so when the door was shut, Forrestal asked his staffer to come over and, you know, basically tell him what was going on. It turns out that it was some creepy, weird-looking guy who was apparently, or supposedly at least, looking for the for Forrestal's help in getting this guy a job in the local post office. So a really weird, really weird, tenuous reason for knocking on the front door. And so the guy sent him on his way, and as I said, that he told Forrest that he was a strange-looking guy dressed in a weird fashion. And Forrest, in a totally paranoid state, was peeking through the window as the guy walked up the driveway towards the street. And he met up with two other similarly dressed guys, and they kind of stood around staring at the window for a while and then wandered off. And, of course, back in those days, you know, the men in black always used to turn up in groups of three. A number of researchers had suggested that this was done deliberately to try and destabilize Forrestal even more by having sort of weird little guys turn up at the front door and try and force their way in. In other words, somebody wanted him gone, and even if he committed suicide, somebody may have been trying to destabilize someone who they knew who had a fragile psychological condition already, if you like. Now, a couple of other interesting things. Forrestal actually began working in the Pentagon on September the 23rd, 1947. Well, September 23rd was also the same day that General Nathan Twining of the Army Air Force, as it was then, wrote this sort of famous document, what were termed flying discs at the time, and where he wrote, "The phenomenon reported is something real and not visionary or fictitious." Famous document, and it was prepared the same day Forrestal started his job. Well, the very day after that, September the 24th, Forrestal had a behind-closed-doors meeting with both Truman and Dr. Vannevar Bush, who's been long connected with the UFO phenomenon. So, again, it's tenuous, or maybe it isn't. It depends on the way you look at it. But we do have these sort of weird little threads. Now, one of the most fascinating things, just a few years ago, the CIA declassified a document which actually contained in a several thousand page file on their work in Guatemala in the 1950s. And there's a document contained in that file titled The Study of Assassination. And it's essentially a document that explains to CIA agents the best way to kill someone and make it look like an accident. And the easiest and most profitable way, the CIA said, was to throw somebody out of a high-story window onto preferably a concrete floor below, which is exactly what happened to Forrestal.
Yeah, so, yeah, how coincidental.
Strange things like that.
Well, in that kind of death, it's really hard to find evidence, except on CSI or Law and Order Special Victims Unit, to find evidence of foul play.
Well, I don't know. With Forrestal, though, as Nick points out in the book, the very fact that his you know, how he was actually supposedly hung himself out the window is a little inconceivable if what he's using is the belt off his bathrobe.
Now, when you looked up the story and did your research, where did you find the information about how he did this, how he accomplished his death?
Oh, well, there's like the official record. There's a stash of newspaper articles at the Forrestal Archives, and I've got three or four biographies on him, you know, written years ago and some more modern. So it's basically, you know, the same way you would do any archival research and biographies on a newspaper report. Of course, you know, there's probably nobody left from that period that was involved now in the investigation. You know, we're talking 65 years ago. But I mean, as Chris just pointed out, the sort of nature of his death is weird, because the official story is that because he was confined in the Bethesda Hospital, he spent most of his time in his dressing gown in his room. Well, the story is that he took the cord, which was a removable cord, out of his dressing gown, tied one end of it round his neck, then tied the other end to the radiator, and then climbed up onto the windowsill and lowered himself out of the windowsill. Now, you know, he was only an average-sized guy. It's not like he had a waist of 60 inches or something.
That sounds highly unlikely.
Yeah, so, you imagine, like, envisaging getting out of a window, which was probably like about 3 feet high or something, when you've got one end of the rope around your neck and the other one's got to be tied around the radiator, and you've probably got to tie both ends twice to make a double knot to keep it secure. Then you've got to climb out and lower yourself down the other side. You know, I mean, what are we talking about, like a cord of 6 feet or something? And what the official story is that when he lowered himself out the window and let go of the sill, the weight of his body supposedly snapped the cord. And what happened was, the official story is that he plummeted to the third floor canopy that stuck out from the main part of the hospital. And, you know, you're not going to survive a fall like that, and he didn't. So there are a lot of anomalies, and I think when you've got several anomalies and weird things going on. At the very least, we've got to kind of give it food for thought at the very least.
Okay, so even if he was off deliberately, is there any reason to stretch that into something related to UFOs?
No, only by the fact that, you know, the date issues as they relate to Vannevar Bush and Twining and the rumors within ufology, but they're unsubstantiated rumors.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to ask me, could we apply it to stress born out of the fear that the Cold War was going to be a hot war and America would be destroyed, maybe he couldn't handle that well. Maybe it was down to the fact that his relationship with his wife wasn't well. On the other hand, maybe it was his wife, the Russians, and Roswell combined. Now, who knows? We really don't know.
One thing that I've noticed, Nick, here, is that there was a document uncovered by Timothy Cooper, who turned it over to Ryan and Bob Wood, and it's an unofficially released document. I think it's called A Study of Assassination. And there is an interesting sentence, allegedly, that was written in there about the untimely death of Secretary Forrestal. Do you want to address that a little bit and then talk about Forrestal making that very kind of oblique and troubling comment to Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas?
Just to let you know, we have about 40 seconds before we have to break. So start the answer here, Nick, and then we'll go on with it.
Oh, okay. Well, as far as this sort of controversial statement that he made is concerned, just literally something like a couple of weeks before his death, he actually told William O. Douglas, who was an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, and this is the exact words, "Bill, something awful is about to happen to me." And this was right around the time when he was getting paranoid and he thought his mail was intercepted, his phone was bugged, and these creepy guys were wandering around his house.
This is only the beginning, folks. Nick Redfern joins us. It's Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. We're looking at the curious death of Secretary of Defense James Forrestal. More to come. With Gene and Chris, you're in. Nick?
How is it, mate? The Paracast.
You're listening to GCN, proudly sponsored by UnseenNow.com. Lock down your digital life at UnseenNow.com. This is GCN.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hey everyone, have you heard about the no-no hair removal device that's sweeping the globe? If you want to go weeks without shaving and get smooth, professional, quality results, here's our favorite host, Cheryl, for no-no hair removal.
Thanks. Hey gals, I love talking about my no-no. It's this cute little hair removal system that you can take with you and use almost anywhere at home or on the road. No more expensive in-office treatments, painful waxing, and no more wasting your valuable time. Got unwanted facial hair? No-no has patented Thermacon technology that works on all hair and skin colors, so it's perfect for using on all body parts. And now you can take advantage of this incredible risk-free trial. Get the No-No, the facial kit, a travel case, and a $100 discount shopping card, and you don't risk a penny to try it. Try the incredible No-No hair completely risk-free. Call 1-800-953-6062. That's 800-953-6062. 800-953-6062.
At 30dayfoodsupply.com, you can now purchase a one-of-a-kind product not available anywhere else, a meatless burger dry mix in four delicious flavors. With our new Oregon Trail Foods vegan burgers, all you do is add water and fry. They need no refrigeration. They're packaged in Mylar bags with an oxygen absorber for a long shelf life. They're non-GMO. They're gluten, soy, nut, and chemical-free, but they're loaded with flavor and a good source of carbs and protein, yet low in sodium. Flavors include Italian, spicy Mexican, six vegetable, and black bean olive. Go to 30dayfoodsupply.com or call 541-229-0010 and order today. Eat them every day, take them camping, or save them for an emergency. Check them out at 30dayfoodsupply.com and click on the vegan burger icon. That's 30dayfoodsupply.com, where all of our products are produced in Oregon by Oregon Trail Foods. 30dayfoodsupply.com.
Ouch! My back is out again!
Hi, Dr. Ortman with Wellspring Spinal Care. If you're experiencing neck, mid, or lower back pain, this information is for you. One of the complaints that I hear is patients receive their typical adjustment, only having to repeat them as the pain returns. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the battle. At Wellspring Spinal Care, we have the entire solution. We use the NUCA approach, utilizing three-dimensional x-rays and gentle touch technology to deliver specific correction. We then design a custom nutritional supplement program which provides essential nutrients targeting the areas of concern. With a NUCA approach and proper nutrition, you'll be on your way to a faster and more permanent recovery. To get you on the road to wellness, visit drortman.com. That's drortman.com. Or call us today, 952-303-9124. That's 952-303-9124. Wellspring Spinal Care. Chiropractic done right.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
By the way, I just told Nick we're going to leave that segment where he was figuring out that we were calling on him to do our stinger. Nick Redfern joins us. We're talking about the fact that the late James Forrestal, shortly before his death, he's speaking to a Supreme Court justice. And it sounds like a pretty paranoid piece of conversation that people are after him.
Well, people may have been after him. I mean, you know, he held a significant position, and he was the first Secretary of Defense. And so a lot was riding on him as a person to, you know, to do good in the job. You know, it wasn't like he was the latest in the long line. He was the very first Secretary of Defense of the United States. Now, as Chris mentioned before the break, we do have one highly controversial document which surfaced via Timothy Cooper, a researcher who was involved in ufology for the most part in the sort of mid to late 90s and then drifted away from it in the early 2000s. And Cooper said that he received literally thousands of pages of documents from various elderly and retired military people who presumably had taken the documents home with them when they retired or had siphoned them out somehow or other. And one of these documents talks about the necessity of protecting the so-called MJ-12 program, which could involve, you know, sort of the ultimate action of wiping people out. And it refers to the regrettable and necessary death of Defense Secretary James Forrestal. Now, as I point out in the section on this, the fact that the document is not surfaced under the terms of the Freedom of Information Act, the fact that it mentions MJ-12 and a significant number of people don't even believe in MJ-12, then it's very important that we view the document for what it actually is, a questionable document without some sort of provenance to it, and that mentions a group that has never been acknowledged as officially existing. And one of the things I do find suspicious about this is that anybody would even commit to writing essentially a statement that confirms they essentially murdered Forrestal. You know, it's kind of like somebody saying in November 63, please dispatch 3 CIA agents to murder President Kennedy and do it in camouflage and make it look like Lee Harvey Oswald did it. You see what I mean? Putting all that in writing would not happen. And so I do find it you know, a little bit suspicious, well, actually a lot suspicious, that somebody would commit something to writing that they killed Forrestal and actually, you know, leave it in a document that possibly anyone could pick up. It almost sounds too good to be true, and it may well have been too good to be true.
What about this Timothy Cooper character? He seems to be the kind of guy who'd come up with this sort of thing. So do you think maybe he was fabricating all of it? And once he accomplished his purpose, he just left?
Well, I actually don't think that. I'll tell you for why. Because the reason I don't think that Timothy Cooper was the one who fabricated these documents was because there were literally thousands of pages that a lot of people don't realize that. They think Cooper received like just a few dozen. It wasn't. It was thousands. Not all of them were in the public domain. And the typewriters used on them were all 1940s and 50s era. And there were like 9 or 10 of them. You know, so if he faked all the documents, he went to an awful lot of trouble to do nothing with his life than fake all these papers and go out of his way to purchase 9 or 10 old typewriters of different types and then put them out there for whatever obscure reason. I mean, it's not like he ever wrote a book or sold them, you know, and burned them onto a CD or whatever and sold them or uploaded them today on Kindle or anything like that. Nothing at all. You know, he just gave them to Bob Wood and Ryan Wood. So I tend to think that he was really the recipient of the documents. But that then sort of begs the question, well, who was responsible for the documents? What was their line of thinking? You know, were they on the level or were they deceived as well into thinking they were real documents and they were given them by somebody else? You know, there's so many different aspects to this. And the problem is, we don't necessarily know who all of Cooper's sources were. They used names and first names and, you know, just terms that really they could have been aliases, which, you know, makes the story even more difficult when you're trying to figure it all out. So when you put all that together, that's why I mention the document in the book, because it relates to the story, but I qualify it by pointing out these various issues.
It is kind of troublesome that when somebody suddenly acquires access to something that nobody else has access, and then I guess it kind of vanishes when he leaves the field.
Well, more came to a halt when he left the field. But this is one of the things I always tell people is that, you know, if you're the recipient of a really controversial story, don't just consider the story. Consider what you're doing at the time in the research field that might warrant somebody trying to discredit you. Now, in other words, it's like if Chris, doing his cattle mute research, suddenly gets leaked, allegedly, you know, an insider document that confirms one of the theories in his book. And then it turns out that the document wasn't real after all. You know, that's why you have to be very careful about what you do with these documents and how you treat them, because it may come to backfire. And when you talk about whether Cooper faked them, I personally don't think he did because of these different issues I brought up, like the number of typewriters and so on. But there are people in ufology who did think and still do believe that Cooper was the only person, that there were no whistleblowers, that it just began and ended with Cooper. So in other words, if that isn't true, if he was deceived, then it actually had the spiraling effect of affecting his status and credibility as well. And maybe that was the goal all along. You know?
Okay, he vanished from the UFO field. Was any effort made to locate him? Where'd he go? Whatever happened to Timothy
Cooper? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like he's vanished. No, he just said, I'm retiring from the subject. And after he made like a final few statements, he just backed away from it and people pretty much left him alone. And, you know, he went back to whatever his life was before. I don't know what that was. But, yeah, it's not like he vanished or there's something sinister. He just said, you know, I'm done with it. I've had enough.
I think you brought up an important point, though, Nick, that he did not try to capitalize on these documents and that he never wrote a book. He never released them in any way to you know, maximize some sort of cash flow or something. So that does, I guess, go in the positive column as him truly believing that these documents were real and that he wasn't fabricating them.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very important point. A lot of people don't appreciate that Cooper said he started to get these documents in like the early 90s through the mid 90s, and it was sort of the mid 90s when they were really reaching him to a large degree. And as I said, Bob Wood and Ryan Wood, who I know very well, they got involved and they essentially said, well, we'd like to dig into this further. And Cooper said, well, okay, that's fine, and sent them copies of the documents so they could be, well, actually, in some cases, the originals were shared as well, so they could be forensically studied and so on. But you're right that Cooper himself didn't write a book. You know, he didn't write magazine articles for, you know, high-paying newspapers or whatever. He didn't go on the lecture circuit. All he did was give UFO researchers the files that he said he'd received from elderly ex-military people and intelligence people. Now, yes, I know studies have been done, quite good studies, on the various reasons why people fake things, and it's not always, as people think, for money, but there usually is a reason. Now, the only reason I can think of, if it was a hoax, was to make the subject look ridiculous, but a lot of people bought into the documents and found them intriguing. So, you know, that doesn't, and I'm sure if Cooper would have realized that, you know, he wasn't a stupid guy. So, in other words, if he was the hoaxer, I've yet to sort of come up with a valid, logical reason why he would do it when, you know, it would have taken, you know, if it had just been, say, one document of 8 pages or something, that's different. When it's thousands of pages, which would have taken him, you know, I don't know how long to do, that puts it into like a completely different ballpark, you know.
Timothy Cooper. Well, if Timothy Cooper's listening to the Paracast, we sure as heck want to talk to him. And by the way, there's a lot more to talk about. Other deaths, it's not just Forrestal. As a matter of fact, it's not just M.K. Jessup, and we'll get to that a little bit later. There are a few others there. A lot of stories to tell, and Nick has put a lot of research together. The book is not huge. It's like 200-some-odd pages. You'll read it in a few hours, and you'll be left thinking, what's he talking about here? We want to know, okay? The book is called Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind, Suspicious Deaths, Mysterious Murders, and Bizarre Disappearances in UFO History. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Great minds think alike. The network for the independent minded. The Genesis Communications Network. GCN.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.